Good evening and welcome to Jazz Unlimited. I'm Dennis Owsley, and tonight we have part two of the jazz history of St. Louis. We're going to be playing music and hearing interviews from the Great Depression and the beginning of World War II. During our time together this evening, we will talk about the lineage of the Cab Calloway Orchestra, which began in St. Louis, the disenfranchisement of minorities by the unions, the formation of the St. Louis Cracker Jacks, the Jeter Pillars Orchestra, and the Eddie Randall St. Louis Blue Devils, and we will hear music from all three of these groups. And we will also find out the effect that a program on WIL called Harlem Rhythm had on two major jazz stars from St. Louis. That will be coming your way on Jazz Unlimited following NPR News. I'm Dennis Owsley. Welcome to Hour 1 of the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 2. Before beginning tonight's show, we have to thank Eddie Randall, Eddie Johnson, Singleton Palmer, George Hudson, Hayes Pillars, Walter Dixon, Kevin Powell, Elwood Buchanan, Clark Terry, Ralph Sutton, Jim Wallace, Ben Sidran for his Miles Davis interview, Ernie Wilkins, and Will Warner. The original Jazz History of St. Louis documentary was funded by a grant from the Missouri Arts Council and was copyright 1987 KWMU. I'm Dennis Owsley. There was a big band formed in St. Louis by Wilson Robinson with both St. Louis and Kansas City musicians called Robinson's Syncopators that went out on the vaudeville circuit in 1923 and wound up at the Cotton Club in New York before Duke Ellington went into the club. They recorded as the Cotton Club Orchestra in 1925 on Snag 'Em Blues with two St. Louisans, trumpeters R.Q. Dickerson and Louis Metcalf. As the Missourians, they recorded Prohibition Blues with solos by R.Q. Dickerson on trumpet and St. Louisan William Thornton Blue on clarinet. The Missourians were taken over by Blanche Calloway and eventually became the Cab Calloway Orchestra. Thank you. I'm Dennis Owsley, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 2. And that was Snaggin' Blues by the Cotton Club Orchestra, recorded in 1925, and Prohibition Blues by the same band called the Missourians in 1929. As a field recording center, St. Louis was the place where Midwestern bands came to record. Jelly Roll Morton recorded Soapsuds as Jelly Roll Martin, with a band that sounded like amateurs in 1926. But two well-known jazz bands of the day, the King Oliver Dixie Syncopators out of Chicago on their way to New York, and the Jesse Stone Blues Serenaders out of Kansas City, recorded here in 1927. Here's a set of three with Black Snake Blues by King Oliver and Starvation Blues and Boot to Boot by Jesse Stone.
Thank you.
Dennis Owsley, thanks for being with me tonight on Jazz Unlimited's Jazz History of St. Louis Part 2. That was King Oliver on cornet, Kid Ory on trombone, Omer Simeon on soprano, Barney Bigard on tenor, Louis Russell on piano, and on Black Snake Blues, and Albert Hinton and Slick Jackson on trumpet, Drewy Bess on trombone, Jack Washington on alto and baritone, and Jesse Stone, the piano and arranger, on Starvation Blues and Boot to Boot. I'm Dennis Owsley, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 2. And the trombonist, Drewy Bess, was from Montgomery City, Missouri, and was a veteran of the Oklahoma Blue Devils. We heard his only two recorded solos in that set. Bess, along with Snub Mosley in the Alfonso Trent Band, were the leading trombonists in the Midwest. Bess came to St. Louis to play with Eddie Randall and other bands in 1931, and later he played with the Earl Hines Band in 1944 and 1946, and was a father figure to many St. Louis musicians from the 1950s until his death. One of the black bands in St. Louis that didn't record was the Floyd Campbell 507, formed in 1927. It worked in St. Louis and parts of the Midwest. In 1928, promoter Jesse Johnson put together a battle of bands between the Alfonso Trent Orchestra and the Campbell Band. It was fronted by Louis Armstrong. It took place on the steamer St. Paul, and according to Campbell, Johnson made no attempt to limit the number of tickets. 5,000 people showed up and got on the boat, which overloaded it, and thankfully the captain returned very quickly to shore, which averted a disaster. We heard the Mound City Blue Blowers with Red McKenzie and Frank Trombauer. McKenzie had a long career as a vocalist into the 40s, recording often with groups he called the Mound City Blue Blowers. McKenzie used a comb with tissue paper, and he could get an uncanny imitation of a muted trumpet using this homemade instrument. He made one of the most famous recordings in jazz with the Blue Blowers in 1929 on Hello Lola, and there was also by the same person, If I Could Be With You 1 Hour Tonight. Here is Hello Lola. Thank you. I'm Dennis Owsley, and that was Hello Lola, recorded in 1929 with the all-star personnel of Glenn Miller on trombone, St. Louis and Pee Wee Russell on clarinet, Coleman Hawkins on tenor, Eddie Condon on banjo, Jack Bland of St. Louis on guitar, Al Morgan bass, Gene Krupa drums, and Red McKenzie on comb and vocal. Clarinetist Pee Wee Russell, who we just heard, was born in Maplewood and had a long career in jazz. He was a pretty incorrigible person and began his career with the Herbert Berger Orchestra in St. Louis. We already heard him on several recordings during the show last week, and he was a wonderful player who, although the Dixieland fans tried mightily, could not be categorized. Here he is on Dwaylon D.A. Blues in 1944, and on Thelonious Monk's tune, Ask Me Now, in 1963. Pee-wee even appeared with Thelonious Monk Quartet at the 1963 Newport Jazz Festival. Thank you. listening to the Jazz History of St. Louis on Jazz Unlimited. I'm Dennis Owsley. We heard Waylon D.A. Blues in 1944 with Pee Wee Russell on clarinet, Jess Stacy piano, Sid Weiss bass, and George Wetling drums. And Ask Me Now in 1963 with Marshall Brown, valve trombone, Russell George piano, and Ronnie Bedford on drums. We're going to close out our discussion of the 1920s in the St. Louis Jazz History documentary with a connection to Fats Waller with several St. Louis musicians. At various times, St. Louis and Gene Cedric, Emmett Matthews, and Arvel Harris, all reed players, John Bugs Hamilton, trumpeter, and Harry Dial, drums, played with him. Here is Breaking the Ice, recorded in 1934.
She was as cool as could be, though I said hello to her twice. Now I can take her to tea. Looks like I'm breaking the ice. I call around every day, and her people treat me so nice. They seem to think I'm okay. Looks like I'm breaking the ice. Bit by bit I've been making a hit. I'm afraid everything's gonna be all right, if you know what I mean. Rome, they say, wasn't built in a day, or romance built in a night, no. But we saw the ring in the store, and I'm gonna save up the price. I guess you know what it's for. Looks like I'm breaking the ice. So nice. They seem to think I'm okay. Looks like I'm breaking the ice. Bit by bit, I'm making a hit. I'm afraid everything's gonna be alright. Old Rome, they say, wasn't built in a day, or romance built in a night. Oh, we saw ring in the store. I'm gonna save up the price. Oh, I guess you know what it's for. You don't? Well, it looks like I'm breaking the ice. Oh, a great big chunk, a little tiny piece. Looks like I'm breaking the ice, yes.
I'm Dennis Owsley, and this is Jazz Unlimited and the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 2. That was Breaking the Ice with Fats Waller on piano and vocal, Bill Coleman on trumpet, Gene Cedric on reeds, Al Casey guitar, Billy Taylor Sr. on bass, and Harry Dial on drums, and it was 1934. Because of the coming Depression, the St. Louis music scene began to fade out by 1929. The last recordings in St. Louis were made by the Alistair Wiley Band in 1928. The field recordings by the major recording companies were no longer made here, but were made in Kansas City. The rise of the Pendergast mob in Kansas City by late 1925 led to his complete control of the city for the next decade and a half. This control was complete enough that Kansas City became very prosperous during the Depression, with as many as 50 jazz clubs and bars featuring jazz by the mid-30s. According to Ross Russell, the Great Depression didn't exist in Kansas City. St. Louis was in terrible shape during the Depression. Statistics show that recovery of St. Louis was slower than in any other of similar-sized American city and was not complete even by the start of World War II. The labor unions totally excluded African Americans from the most skilled building trades, except for the hod carriers. The same process happened to black musicians. White musicians were able to obtain jobs at the Arcadia and other ballrooms in the city, as well as in theater and radio orchestras. The black musicians' Local 44 had its charter revoked by the American Federation of Musicians in 1931 as part of this effort to disenfranchise minorities, and the white union pulled all kinds of terrible illegal stunts to get this to happen. This effectively ended union jobs for black musicians in clubs in St. Louis. However, they seem to have forgotten that the gangsters controlled the clubs, and they liked the black musicians. So black musicians could still work in the clubs. Because of that, the white musicians' union left them alone. Walter Tiny Dixon, he's a music fan who worked for Jesse Johnson, the promoter, and others during this period, remarked on how the music got him through.
And St. Louis, which it is polarized now, but it's not as bad as it was then, because they had these police districts, and every white policeman in the Negro area hated Negroes. And we had a lot of discrepancies, things that are unmentionable. But anyway, I kept my mind on music so much that I lifted myself above those bad thoughts.
I'm Dennis Owsley, and that was Walter Dixon talking about his situation as an African-American in St. Louis during the Depression. After the death of Oliver Cobb, pianist Eddie Johnson took over the Rhythm Kings and renamed the band the St. Louis Cracker Jacks. This band recorded two titles under Johnson's leadership. In 1932, the Cracker Jacks opened the Plantation Club, a whites-only establishment that was a fixture in St. Louis for many years. The Plantation Club featured black entertainment. The band had also added Winfield Baker on trombone and Shorty Baker on trumpet by this time, and the working hours were long at the Plantation Club. Here is one of the recordings that the St. Louis Cracker Jacks made in Atlanta in 1932. As part two of Jazz Unlimited's Jazz History of St. Louis continues.
Put him on the table with his legs sticking up. In steps, sister, with a spoon and a glass. Stir the gravy from his yes, yes, yes. In my sweetie was walking down the street. She caught the rheumatism and her darn big feet. She stooped over to pick up some bread. And the same thing struck her in her yes, yes, yes. I'm going down on Market Street. That's where the women and the men all meet. That's where the men do the Georgia rub. And the women fall in line with their big voices. Down on Market is a good location. Just across the street from the gasoline station. That's where you get your cars all and green. and the women howling, "Daddy, won't you come in, please?" I'll sing this verse, and I'll sing no more. Somebody's knocking at my door. The people upstairs have gone to bed. I better stop this noise before they crack my head.
That was the St. Louis Cracker Jacks version of the Ducks' Yass, Yass, Yass. The group consisted of Shorty Baker and James Talfee on trumpet, Winfield Baker on trombone, Singleton Palmer on tuba, Eddie Johnson piano, Walter and Freddie Martin on alto, Ernest Franklin on tenor, Benny Jackson doing the vocal and playing drums, and the tune was written by James Stump Johnson, the brother of promoter Jesse Johnson, and was kind of the type of risque blues that were kind of popular during that time. It actually, in the mid-30s, was a hit by a group called the Three Peppers. Now, here is band leader Eddie Johnson talking about the St. Louis Cracker Jacks and the Plantation Club. Singleton Palmer also remembers Club Plantation.
I took over the band, and we called it St. Louis Cracker Jacks. It was in 32 at Greystone Ballroom in Detroit. I was Eddie Johnson's Cracker Jacks. And behind that, I left there and made a recording for Victor Company. And Benny Jackson sang the Ducks' Yes, Yes, Yes. And on the other side, a number called Good Old Bosom Buried. We made that in Atlanta, Georgia. Then I started calling myself Eddie Johnson and Victor Recording Orchestra. That was in 32.
Who else was in the band in 1932?
Well, there was Betty Jackson, James Telfey, Singleton Palmer, Freddie Martin, Walter Martin, Lester Nichols on drums. For only had a Cracker Jacks about 5-6 years. I gave the band up. I turned loose the twins and one boy named Ernest Franklin. They called him Chink. And I got Tab Smith and Donald Stovall and those musicians. Club Plantation opened in 31, and I opened it up. I opened the Club Plantation up, and I was there about a year. That's when the Greystone Ballroom sent down and got me out of Detroit. Then in 47, Plantation hired me back, and I stayed with them until they closed, and we closed with the Ink Spots for 2 weeks. I was the last band to play at the Club Plantation.
See, I played in the Plantation also with Eddie Johnson. It was back in the 30s, too. Oh, it was a good place to work. It just had long hours, you know, 9:30 to 4 in the morning. Yeah, and then you had to play 3 shows a night for the chorus girls and play for different acts that come in. And when Mae Johnson, she was a singer, and then they had comedians, a guy named Strange Man. And those shows were real good back in those days. It's too bad it couldn't have been on TV, you know. But it was a hard job. Jim Scarpelli and Tony Scarpelli were the owners of it. But they were good to work for.
Statement 42. I'm Dennis Owsley, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis. George Hudson was born in Birmingham, Alabama, and is a member of the Alabama Jazz Hall of Fame. He grew up in Pittsburgh and was working with Zach White's Chocolate Bow Brummels. He was in a rooming house in Pittsburgh when a telegram came for Roy Eldridge to join the Alfonso Tremp Band. But Roy was out of town, so Hudson, being an opportunist, he went instead. The Tremp Band was the forerunner of the Jeter Pillars Orchestra in St. Louis and had many entertaining features later copied by the Jimmy Lunsford Orchestra. Here are Hudson and Hayes Pillars describing the incident of Hudson getting to the Alfonso Tremp Band, and then Hayes Pillars will describe how much the Jimmy Lunsford Orchestra was indebted to the Tremp Band. As part two of Jazz Unlimited's Jazz History of St. Louis continues, I'm Dennis Owsley.
We were staying at the hotel. Sterling Hotel was the name of the hotel. All the musicians stayed there. And they came into town. That was a hot town. You come in and play there. And if you stayed there, most of the bands would work out of there and go play West Virginia and Virginia and all those places like that. Kentucky and all those places. And those ballrooms were popular all through that part of the country. And it had nice work. Well, his name was Carter. And he ran the elevator. Now, I was still there with Zach White, that's who it was. And Trent and Carl Rich, they were very familiar with Rich. Everybody was Trent. Anyway, he called him and said, I need a trumpet, please. I'll send you money and send me Roy Eldridge. Well, Roy and I grew up together in Pittsburgh. I knew Roy. And Roy wasn't in town. He was with the band called Speed Webb. So that's Rich did just what Trent told him to do. Got a job for you. He came looking for me. Said, I got a job for you. And Trent wants you. And said, in the morning I'll have your fare. I'm waiting for you. So you pack tonight and be ready to move. And he got a ticket and everything. And I left because I had gotten tired of playing with Zach anyway. Pillars met me at the station. And Pillars picked me up and took me to Trent and everything. I stayed with him a long time.
And we sent a telegram with the railroad transportation for Roy Eldridge. For Roy Eldridge to join us in Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania. And we sent the telegram to a fellow named Rich Carpenter. Rich Carpenter was a promoter around there, but he couldn't read nor write. And Rich Carpenter gave this telegram to George Hudson, who was playing around there in Cincinnati with Zach White's band. And so what happened was George Hudson came to Wilkes-Barre, Pennsylvania, because I was one of the ones that went down to meet him. The type of band we had a sensational band. We had a band that Alfonso Tremp Band was a band that played they played sweet music, they played hot music. We sang. We had a vocal group in the brass section, a vocal group in the reed section. This was the band that gave a Jimmy Lunsford his style.
I'm Dennis Owsley, and this is the Jazz History of St. Louis, Part 2, and it's on Jazz Unlimited. We heard both Eddie Johnson and Singleton Palmer talking about Club Plantation in St. Louis, and we will be spending some more time with Club Plantation bands in the second hour of Jazz Unlimited. We will hear the Jeter Pillars Orchestra and the St. Louis Cracker Jacks after Eddie Johnson left. And we will also be hearing some things about the Eddie Randall St. Louis Blue Devils, all that's coming your way here on Jazz Unlimited, following the station break.